Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big money
at Menards. Today on The Grave Talks, inside the haunted Night House, a conversation with owner Eric Freeman Sims. When seasoned paranormal investigator Eric Freeman Sims and his husband purchased the historic Night House in Hopkinsville, Kentucky, they weren't just buying a piece of real estate, they were stepping into a haunted legacy. Built between 1815 and 1820, the Night House is the oldest standing structure in the city and was home to the prominent Night family for 80 years. But the echoes of the past haven't gone silent. Since moving in, Eric and his husband have experienced disembodied voices, phantom footsteps, mysterious knocking, and unexplainable sounds that suggest the Knight family may not have truly left. Are they still walking the halls of their former home, or is something else bound to the land? Join us for a journey into one of Kentucky's most compelling haunted homes. Today on The Grave Talks, a conversation with Eric Freeman Sims about the Knight House. Eric Freeman Sims, you were on an episode of The Grave Talks with me a while back, and that was called Legends of Tennessee. And we talked about your book, Small Town Haunts and Legends of Tennessee. So as I was kind of digging into your book and reading your book and learning about you, I realized that you and your husband had purchased an old historic house. It just happens to be haunted. And I was like, I want you to come back on the show to talk about the Night House, and here you are today. Thank you very much for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, we bought the old 210-year-old haunted house. That was the kind of creepy house that everybody made legends up when they rode by it as kids.
Absolutely. That would be the house in town that I could see everybody, especially once I've seen pictures of it, where everybody would be like, that's the haunted house. And everybody would have some kind of story about something that happened to them at the haunted house.
And, you know, I get calls from people randomly because it's my phone number that's on the website and stuff for people to reserve tours and things. So I get calls and texts from people randomly being like, I grew up just a few houses down. Let me tell you what happened, you know, the ghost stuff that happened. Or the Rogers family that lived there from the 40s up until the 2014, they actually owned a few houses around there and rented them out. And so I've had a few of those people call me and say, yeah, I grew up in one of those houses and they were our landlords. So I would, you know, be in the house periodically and I would see this or hear that or, you know, and so it's kind of crazy getting all those stories and then hearing from the general public about, you know, the house has been there my entire life. I've never been able to go into it because it's always been a residence and they didn't know the people that lived there. And so now they're just, because it is the old haunted house, they're fascinated to come in the house and the fact that they actually get the opportunity, you know, to come take a history tour to the paranormal or, you know, an event they can come to and actually see the house.
See, I find that really compelling because there's a house or two actually in my town that I want to go in so bad, but they're private residences and outside of just walking up and knocking on the door, I'm a little not okay with doing that. I don't know how I can ever get in, you know? Yeah. I would just have to walk up to a total stranger's house and say, can I come inside, which is intimidating and doesn't feel safe to the owners.
Right, right.
But for you and your town, I think that's awesome that people can come in it now.
Yeah, and we've partnered up with Visit Hopkinsville, which is the city's convention and tourist bureau. And so we've had tour buses in the house so far with people from out of town and things like that. So yeah, just trying to get it out there. People in town are familiar with the house, of course, because it's always been there, but they're not familiar with the history because it's always been a residence. And so I've been fighting this uphill battle for the past year to get the residents of Hopkinsville in that area to understand this is a significant house in y'all's history, but also the people that lived in it, the five families that lived in it were very significant in shaping Hopkinsville as well.
So you and your husband decided you wanted a historic house. Were you familiar with this house or did you just kind of find it?
No, we were not familiar with it at all. We actually found it online, and that's an interesting story. I've been a paranormal investigator for 25 years. And so I've been to lots of historic locations, and a lot of what we do, you know, 80, I always say 80% of what we do is history. Mm-hmm. The other 20% is kind of connected to the history through the paranormal. And I was talking to an investigator friend of mine on the phone one night, and I was surfing on the internet. He's surfing on the internet. And I come across this, we started talking about how cool it would be to someday own our own location. And you know how your phone and stuff listens to you. Well, this group popped up on Facebook that it suggested that I might like that was old houses, $50,000 and beyond. They also have a website, and then they have a sister site called Old Houses, $100,000 and beyond. And so me and him just, you know, just for fun, we're on there looking. I realized that these older houses were going for really cheap, especially outside of like metropolitan areas. Mm-hmm. Now, like I live outside of Nashville. Now you try to buy a house like this in Nashville, it's going to cost you millions of dollars.
Well, it's a lot of loan. Yeah. In Nashville, yeah. They want the land.
Right. And so, but somewhere like Hopkinsville, which is a pretty good sized city, about 40,000 people, they just don't have the housing market like Nashville does. And there's not the need, you know, that expense of the land. So a lot of these older houses are just, if nobody buys them, they're being torn down for one. And also this house was a rarity when it popped up. It's never been abandoned, which is odd for a 200-year-old house.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah, most of them go through some period of abandonment because the family ran out of money or whatever, and they go derelict. But this one never had. They had it up for cash sale because it did not have a kitchen, and they had a 4-foot trench around the house where they were waterproofing the foundation because it's a stacked stone foundation, so water just comes in the basement, was coming into the basement and into the cellar. And then there was no handrail on the front stairs, along with some other things. And so you couldn't get it insured, and it didn't have a kitchen. So no mortgage company would give you a loan for it. So you had to pay cash. For one, on the 3 acres that it sits on, it was $150,000 what they had it listed for. And so we went and looked at it. And on the way home, because somehow I sold my husband on this crazy idea of owning a location and opening our own business, you know, with history tours and things, we went and looked at the house. And we had to sign a waiver to even walk on the property because they didn't have insurance. If anything happened to us, you know, we were responsible if we broke our own leg or something, you know. We went and looked, and on the way home, we talked like we already owned it. This is what we're going to do to it. This is the first things we need to do. We need to get insurance, you know, that type of stuff. We sent them an offer, and they rejected it because it was lower than what they were asking. And we knew we had some leverage because they'd had it on the market for about a year and a half. And they had moved to California. So they're just spending money on this house, you know, for somebody to mow the yard, somebody to upkeep. They're flying back to take care of things. So it's just really just costing them money. So we knew we kind of had some leverage. And the fact that it takes a certain buyer who has the cash money to buy this house. And so ended up going back and forth with them. And then we finally just said, no, we're not going to get to the number that we feel comfortable with because we're going to have to put another $50,000 into the house, you know, right off the bat. So we went and looked at other houses. And we kept coming back to the night house. Like we were supposed to own the night house. And I actually had two very lucid dreams where I knew I was dreaming. And the Eliza and JB Knight, who we've named the house after, actually came to me in my dream and told me that they wanted us to own the house, that they thought we'd be the best stewards of their history.
Really?
And their names out there. Yeah. So it was just kind of meant to be. And we thought the deal was done and we were kind of bummed about it. But we're looking at other houses that were really cool. And there's lots of them out there, but Hopkinsville is about an hour and a half from us and where we live. And so it was within a decent driving range and it was just kind of the perfect place. And so all the criteria kind of fit. So we're kind of bummed out. Well, they came back and countered their own offer for way lower because they didn't have any other serious buyers. And so we were surprised by that. So then we countered another 5,000 lower and we got the house for what we wanted it for.
Really?
Yeah.
They got lucky because you could have bought another house and They're like the only people who have been interested in a year and a half just walked away.
Well, and there was a house that we seriously looked at that was going up for auction. It was a Victorian house. The only problem was it was 3 hours away. But this Victorian house was amazing. And it had stained glass windows and had the grand staircase with the big bronze statue at the end with the lights on it and a hand-carved newel post and like all this amazing stuff, all this amazing original woodwork. And it went for auction for $65,000.
Yeah, but did the former owners come to you in a dream?
No, they did not. So, so we very well could have bought that house because we had the cash, you know, and so, but it was 3 hours away was the problem.
Right.
So, but no, it was meant to be. We knew when they came back and countered their own offer, you know, it cost themselves money that it definitely was meant to be.
So the house is more than 200 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
How good of shape was it in? I mean, you mentioned a couple of things like no kitchen. That's pretty big. The trench, you know, the water around the house coming into the basement, big thing. So did it cost you quite a bit of money to really get it up to code?
It did. And the owners that we bought it from, they bought it in 2014. So they owned it for 10 years. And they put a lot into it. They saved the house. They really did. The house was basically sinking in the middle. And the previous owner was an engineer. So he went in and shored up the foundation and jacked it back up and all that stuff. So they did a lot of work to the house to save it. And he told us at closing that when they bought it in 2014, that they could have easily just probably cheaper. It would have been cheaper for them to tear it down. But because he fell in love with the house, they put, you know, money into it and blood, sweat, and tears into it every 10 years. And then the reason they sold it is because he got his dream job at Disney out in California. And it was either a dream house or Disney, his dream job. And so he told his wife, I can always buy another dream house.
Right.
So
I'd have done the same thing.
Yeah. So they put a lot of money into it. And we just picked up where they left off. So when I say there was a trench around the house, well, he had already put the waterproof membrane. We just had to backfill the trench, put gravel in because it had a French drain and all this stuff. We had to put a handrail on the front porch, finish some vinyl siding. The kitchen and kind of the wing they built onto the house was kind of where most of our money was spent in the beginning last year, because he gutted out the kitchen that was there and was putting a more modern kitchen in, a more modern building. And then also the wing that he built onto the house with the modern kitchen and laundry room, he connected the summer kitchen to the house with that too. So the summer kitchen would have been a separate building, a separate brick building, kind of the same red brick as the house. At some point in time, it had burnt, at least partially burned down. Well, he tore it down and rebuilt it in the same place on the same foundation. And like I said, he built a wing to attach it to the house. So that increased the square footage of the house also. We just had to finish the kitchen and then put floors and walls and stuff in the summer kitchen area, finish the laundry room. So we spent about 40-50 grand on doing all that. And the summer kitchen is our office now and our bedroom where we stay when we're up there. And we have the laundry room, like I said, and then the full kitchen now. Also doing other things like now we're sanding and scraping the big columns to repaint them and working on some of the rotten wood and things like that. We also finished the siding on the house, and the siding is just we're putting a vinyl siding because it covers the original wood and protects it from further rotting and damage. So kind of preserving it for years to come instead of completely replacing it. And also you have to go back and repaint the wood, you know, every so many years.
Right.
And the weather just takes its toll on it.
But that wood with 200 years of being out in the elements, yeah, you do need to protect that.
Yeah. And we got some clap back from some of the like old house purist people, but we explained we're actually encapsulating the wood. So the original wood remains there, you know? And so instead of just tearing it off and replacing it with vinyl siding, you know, I'm trying to do some restore efforts like that. We're not changing the house whatsoever. The house has been changed a lot because you have all these different families that kind of changed it, you know, to their needs. And then of course you have the modernization of the house in the 1950s and 1960s, with the Rogers family putting in modern plumbing, modern electricity. That's another thing the previous owner from us did, was he upgraded a lot of the plumbing and upgraded a lot of the electrical.
Oh, that's
and then when
huge.
We come in, yeah. And then when we come in, we finished upgrading all that stuff. So we have three fully functional bathrooms and, you know, fully functional kitchen and laundry room and all that stuff.
What's crazy is there's a video on your website of you kind of showing people around the house, walking through the house. It's a great tour. You really get to see what it looks like. But it's six different levels.
Yeah.
That's what's crazy.
5,600 square foot mansion, six different levels. The ground level is the biggest, of course, because it has the new wing onto it. But the house was built as half levels. They go back and forth. So if you look at it like on the right-hand side, when you're looking at the big columns, underground, you have a cellar. Well, then when you come up the stairs on the left-hand side, you have the basement. It's the full length of the house with only half. And so then you come up to the ground floor. And of course, like I said, the ground floor is the new wing, and they added a bedroom and things on the ground floor too, and a dining room. And then, but when you come up to the parlor runs the full width of the house, but only half the house. And then it goes back and forth up to the attic, to where the attic runs the full length of the house, but only half the width. So, yeah, six levels, and those, man, that's a lot of stairs.
It looked like a lot of stairs.
Yeah.
In the where you talked about the building the railing to the front of the house, talk about a lot of stairs. There's a lot of stairs that go up to the front door.
Yeah, and there's interesting folklore with those stairs, and it may actually be true. Don't know for sure, but that front porch was built by the Knights by Jamie Knight when they moved in the 1860s. It would have been a wooden staircase at that time. And one of the legend goes that one of his daughters fell down the stairs and broke her leg really badly that almost killed her, and that she was permanently disfigured after that, that she had to walk with a limp and a cane, and her leg was never the same. That made him mad and her brothers mad, so they went out and tore the stairs off the front of the house. And it did not have stairs until the Rogers put the granite steps in the 1970s.
That would be a huge drop-off then.
Yeah, so it was just a front deck. So whenever that happened is when J.B. Knight built the side porch with the big columns and that big entrance to the house.
Oh, that makes some sense. Yeah. I thought that was interesting because it has what looks like two front porches, like two entrances.
Right. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
That kind of makes some sense, actually.
Yeah, when you look at the picture of the house, the brick structure was the all original. And it was a federal style. So it was very, like, almost like a Lego house, you know, very square, mm-hmm. not a whole lot of fanciness to it at all. The front porch, we think originally was, you come step out on the front porch and it may have been 4 foot wide from the house. And then you had stairs going down each side. Would have kind of been the style back then. And then J.B. Knight, when he bought the house in 1860, he upgraded the house to the times, which back in the 1860s, the big thing was Greek Revival with the big giant columns. The Greek key designs, all this fancy woodwork and things like that. And not only did he do it to the outside of the house with the big columns in the front porch, he also did it inside the house. So in the parlor, it has 2 foot tall baseboards that are real fancy. The molding around the doorways and the windows is big, giant, chunky molding. He turned all the mantles into these very plain looking, but like column looking mantles. So yeah, he completely changed the house when he moved in to the style of the day.
Now, you mentioned being a paranormal investigator. You're really into history as well. How hard was it to find the history of this house?
I have to do a lot of digging. One of the cool things that we got with the house that normally you don't see with a house like this, or even like a house that's they turn into a museum, we have about 200 original documents from the Knights doing business, buying and selling houses. There's some personal letters, J.B. Knight's handwritten will, his father's handwritten will. We have an original J.B. Knight business card. So we have all these original documents from them that kind of point to some of their history of the Knights themselves, which we call it the Knight House because they lived there from 1860 until 1945.
That's a long time.
Yeah, 85 years. They're the most predominant family. They also had the biggest impact on the house, like I was saying, with all the changes they did. And all the additions, because they added on the dining room, they added on a bedroom, they changed it to where the parlor is now, and things like that. So they had the biggest impact, because that's a big question I get. Why do you call it the Knight House? And they just lived there the longest, had the biggest impact on the house and changing it. But they were worth about, in the 1850s, 1860s, J.B. Knight, he was an attorney, but he was a real estate magnate, and he owned thousands of acres, but his wealth was around $40 million in today's money.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so with all his land, and he owned a blacksmith shop and all this other stuff, and bought and sold hotels and things. And so he was very, very wealthy and very well known across the country. I mean, I find newspaper articles from like Philadelphia where like the big hotel in Philadelphia said, in the newspaper to be JB Knight arrives, you know, at hotel with this list of other socialite and big, rich and famous people, you know. But we find him in New Orleans, Nashville, I mean, Savannah. He's all over the eastern side of the country doing business. Chicago, he owned a three-story apartment building in Chicago. So he was kind of all around doing business and owned lots of thousands of acres of land across the country. He was also very instrumental in shaping Hopkinsville, even though Hopkinsville sounded like 1798. He was on the board that brought the railroad through town. He started the first women's college, funded the first women's college in town, and all these other things. He built some of the buildings downtown that still stand today. He helped fund the building of.
When you were giving the tour, the video tour that I watched, there's a curio cabinet that you said there's a lot of things that you found in the house. And then when you went up to the attic, a lot of things were left there. And you've got it nicely furnished, because I'm like, a house that big, that takes a lot to furnish it.
Yeah.
Did they leave quite a bit behind?
So the years? Yeah. So the Knights, when they, the last of the Knights, they had, it was JB and Eliza were the parents, and they had seven kids, and all of their kids grew up in the house. Two of them lived in the house their entire lives, never got married, never had kids. That was Charlie and Ida. Thomas was the youngest son. And then Thomas took over the house in 1940 after his wife died, and his sister Ida died in 1939. He took over the house, and he was the last one to die in 1941. And his nephew was going to take over the house, Leon, but he died in 1942 before he could. And they didn't have any other family that could afford the upkeep of the house, especially not to modernize it, you know, because in the 40s, you're starting to have indoor plumbing, modern electricity, a lot more of those things. And the house was not equipped with any of that. Thomas, from what I know, when Thomas died, he was still cooking on a fire in the basement hearth.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, and still had an outhouse, you know. So the family, the Knight family, just extended family, didn't have money to deal with it. So they auctioned everything off in the house, all the Knight's belongings, and sold the house. And so we only know of one piece of furniture that actually belonged to the Knights, and is at the Historical Society in Hopkinsville. And that's because a lady who traced her ancestry to those Knights in Vermont, she had a washstand that belonged to Ida. And it's from the early 1900s. It's not even something that's really old. It's a marble top washstand. But that's the only piece of furniture we know. We really don't have many pictures of many of them. I don't have any pictures of JB Knight or Eliza that I've uncovered so far. And I only have pictures of two of the kids out of seven. The one son, John Jr., in 1871, when the Great Chicago Fire happened, it burned down the apartment building that I was talking about that JB Knight owned. So he sent his second oldest son, who had just become a lawyer, to Chicago to see overseeing the rebuilding of the apartment building, because it was a good income generator and it was high income apartments. It wasn't like it was in a high income area of Chicago in the, I believe it was the Market District. So it made him a lot of money. Well, his son, John Jr., never came back to Hopkinsville. He stayed in Chicago and built his own real estate empire until he died in 1929. And he just came back to Hopkinsville to visit. So because he was in Chicago with modern photography then, we have a lot of pictures of him. And then there was a picture found in the attic that we think is, I'm pretty sure after talking to the historian, that is Thomas, the youngest son. His picture when he first became a lawyer in the 1880s. This would have been like the portrait that hung in his office, you know, type deal. So those are the only two of the Knights we found pictures of, because they, you know, they got rid of everything. So a lot of the furniture, to answer your question further, a lot of the furniture that was left in the house was from the Rogers family. And the Rogers family bought the house in 1948 and lived there until 2014, when the youngest son who took it over, he died. And so a lot of their stuff, his kids, from what I understand, his son and daughter came in, had a big estate sale, sold everything in the house. What didn't sell was left there for when the people we bought it from, the Rassets, when they bought it in 2014, all of that stuff was left in the house. We have a piano. We have a Victrola cabinet. We have a big canopy bed. And there's various other things. The attic has still got a lot of their stuff in it that we just hadn't had time to clean out.
It's got to be exciting when you find some things that tie back to the family.
Yeah. It's pretty neat. And that curio cabinet that we have is all like amateur archaeology stuff that we found. So it's pieces of plates and china that date from the 1800s all the way to the 1940s let's see, we found a Chanel No. 5 perfume from the 1940s, and it still has perfume in it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and let's see, there's all kind of stuff. Hand-wrought nails, square nails, hand-wrought iron spikes, bobbin from a spinning wheel that they would have used to make lace. It's got a bunch of different grooves in it that they would have had the different threads in to make, you know, weave lace into different patterns and things. So all kind of interesting things. We have a hand-carved duck decoy. Some of the original door, some of the doorknobs that Jamie Knight would have put in the house back in the 1850s, 1860s. We have several of those, which would have been really expensive back then because they're really fancy. Some lock plates and things like that. But we find stuff all the time. Just digging on the property, you find stuff.
So once you guys bought the house and you start doing some renovations and working on the house, how long was it before you said, what was that? What did I just hear?
Actually, day one, when we left the lawyer's office after we signed the paperwork and got the keys. We went to the house, and it was me and my husband. His aunt was our realtor, so she went with us. And then his parents hadn't seen the house. So we took them all over to check the house out. And his aunt, being the realtor, she really hadn't seen it either. So I go to use the bathroom. Somebody knocks on the door. And I said, I'll be out in a minute. And I come right out, and there's nobody there. They're on the other side of the house. So I don't know who knocked on the door. It wasn't any of them.
Couldn't have been them.
Yeah, so it started, this is the first 15 minutes of us owning the house, you know. And at that time, it was a big empty house, you know, and the addition wasn't finished. And so it was a little creepier than it is now with it all furnished and looking nice and all that stuff finished. But never got the creeps in the house. The one thing that everybody always says is that the house is just welcoming. They just feel at home when they go in. They don't feel creeped out, even knowing it's haunted. And we have activity all the time. They don't feel creeped out or anything. About a week later, my husband had his first experience. He was locking up for the night, and he closed before we finished the kitchen area, there's a door that in between the kitchen and the dining room, and we shut it, and it has one of those little hook latches. And so he latched it, and he heard three knocks on the other side of the door. Well, he thought he locked either me or my brother in there. And so he's like, hold on a second. He unlocks it, unlatches it, and opens the door. There's nobody there, and he can see out the window in the kitchen that we're standing on the lawn. And so he's like, okay, whatever. Shut the door and locked it again.
You have very polite ghosts.
Yeah, yeah.
They like to knock. It's like, I'm here. And actually, there was a video on the website that you have of knocking.
Yeah.
But I think I was looking at the timestamp on it. It's like at night.
Yeah.
There's nobody knocking.
They're very noisy at night. Yeah.
And did your husband, he's like, okay, we'll buy this historical house. Is this indulging you, or is he kind of interested in this as well?
He doesn't care anything about the paranormal.
Okay.
He's never been on investigation with me, nothing. We've been together 20 years. I've been doing this for 25. He's never been on investigation with me, nothing. He don't care anything about the paranormal. He is a huge history buff, too. And so he gets a kick out of all the history and stuff as well. Also, we do all the work on the house ourselves because his dad has been a contractor for 50 years. His parents come and help us, but he grew up doing construction. That's the part that he loves is fixing the house. And I love that part too, because when you start a project on a house like that, that, you know, like the columns that we're sanding and painting now, it's a lot of work to sand those big columns. But we know the end result is going to be worth all the work.
Yeah.
You know, so to build something, to make something out of nothing, I've kind of fallen in love with that over the years with him as well. That we kind of work our asses off sometimes building like a deck on our own house or something, but we know that the end justifies the means. So there's also something satisfying about the sweat equity that you put into your own house like that, that especially since we get to share that house with everybody else, you know, whoever wants to come in the house, that we can share it with them. And so that's satisfying too, to have those people come in and pick out your work and how much they like it is pretty cool too. So he's more into the building part of it, the designing part of it, you know, parts of the house that we've designed. He does landscaping professionally for a big giant company, and he's one of the managers. And so he gets a kick out of that too, designing the landscaping, because the house really didn't have any landscaping. So, you know, beautifying and fixing up the house, that's his thing. And the history is his part of it, to where mine, you know, is the history and the paranormal. So
when you first bought it, since you're not living in it full time, because you live a little ways away, Was that one of the ideas that you would rent it out for paranormal investigations? Or did that kind of come after all the knocking and things are happening and it's like, wait a minute?
Well, yeah, at first we were like, well, we'll see. And then I said, well, I want to go in and investigate with my friends and see what we get and see if they're willing to talk and see who's here and kind of get a sense of who we're dealing with and that type of stuff. And like I said, to see if they're even willing to talk. Also to see if there's an intelligent haunting as opposed to just residual stuff, as opposed to just something replaying over and over, you know, just kind of a recording. Yeah, it took a little doing because they were not used. Nobody's ever been investigated, and I don't think anybody really ever tried to communicate with them. It just kind of was something that was there, and people were kind of scared of it. And things had happened over the years, like I said, because I've gotten calls and things from people, but kind of known, but kind of ignored. And so then when we started acknowledging them and talking to them, it was kind of a learning curve, I think, for them to figure out how to talk back to us. And the equipment that we use investigating, how to use it, you know, and us teaching them how to use that. But after the first couple of investigations, yeah, we were sold on the thing of like, okay, well, let's book some of our teams, our friends' teams that we know first, let them come in, get their honest opinion about it, and then go from there. And so we bought the house in April, and we actually didn't open it up until September for paranormal investigations because we wanted to make sure that, you know, they were going to talk to people and that people were going to come in and have a good experience.
What kind of experiences did they have right off the bat?
Well, we have experiences all day, every day there. There's always something going on. And the same with the teams that come in. The teams are getting voices and EVPs and things like that. We hear loud, audible voices all the time. You can't always make us out what they're saying, but like, just last week, we heard a woman say a full sentence from the parlor when we were in the kitchen.
Wow.
And it kind of echoes, and you could hear her say the full sentence, but you can't hear what she's saying. And so a lot of that, there's a, one of them like to show themselves as a shadow in the attic. So I've seen that. There's been several other groups that have seen that. Knocking, of course, the knocking, setting off anything that is motion sensor they like to play with. I had some Halloween props that are motion censored that they had a ball with around Halloween last year. And so, just the whole manner of things. I've seen a couple of apparitions around the house, very quickly. They've kind of shown themselves to me, but yeah, just kind of the whole gamut of paranormal activity. And we believe at this point with all the investigations we had so far and my own investigating and us just being there all the time, that we think we have three intelligent spirits, and then we have a lot of residual stuff too.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation with Eric Freeman Sims about the Night House. For more information, follow them on Facebook or visit their website, thenighthouseky.com. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes without commercials, become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts where you can try it for 3 days free, or you can also go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you so much for listening.